Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Oh, welcome to the broadcast. So good to have you here. I don't know if you guys heard that blank spot, but my audio just went dead in my headset. So always interesting when you're doing this with all this technology. Appreciate you joining us. It's Monday, October 21st, and we have as our special broadcast, on our special broadcast today, Jay Brinkman, who is going to be talking and discussing about the economy, talking about the upcoming annual convention. Very excited to have Jay on the broadcast here in a little bit in the Hot Topics segment. And we're also going to ask him a lot of questions about, did the government shutdown have any impact on the direction that of the economy and some of his predictions and prognostications about all of that good stuff. So anyway, appreciate you so much joining the broadcast. Again, we are the proud recipients of the Innovation Award for 2012, and we received it in 2013. We're so pleased to have many of you joining the broadcast repeatedly. We have over 290,000 downloads of this broadcast, which is amazing. We have multiple thousands of mortgage professionals each week tuning in on the broadcast. And a special thank you goes to our sponsor, United Guarantee. And I want to talk about today their performance premium, which is an industry's only MI pricing that is truly risk-based. It's surpassing simple tiered-based systems, broadening options for lenders and their customers. While performance premiums and your mortgage loans receive a price that is truly reflects loan quality. So UGI's or United Guarantee's performance premium really helps you zero in on loan quality, which should give them a significant advantage in the market. Performance premium is the first MI pricing plan to examine the full range of mortgage risk attributes, generally a unique price for each loan, pricing each loan that you originate. By considering a comprehensive loan elements, performance premium pricing goes farther beyond the simple tiered pricing systems. So it should yield you a better price at a better risk and for the better risk loans, and you can pass the premium savings on to your customers. Expanded loan eligibility is another opportunity that's there, so be sure to check all this out at www.ugcorp.com. Again, www.ugcorp.com. Be sure to check them out. And for those of you attending the annual conference, seek out their booth. Tell them that you're a listener of the Lincoln on Lending radio program, and you'll enjoy and appreciate them being a sponsor. Again, thank you to UGI, United Guarantee, for being our sponsor, and congratulations to them on their 50th anniversary. Joe Farr, good to have you here with us on the broadcast.
Good morning, Dave.
Yeah, good. By the way, did that audio cut out for you, or was it playing just fine, or was it just my headset that cut out?
Sounded fine. Sounded fine throughout.
Well, I'm glad I didn't go, oh, no, right in the middle of all that. Well, I want to get through all this because I know we all excited to have Jay on the broadcast, give as much time as possible. I forgot to tell the listeners, I missed being on the broadcast. So special thank you to Alice for doing an outstanding job of hosting the broadcast while I'm out for jury duty. And then what was the other thing? I was speaking at a conference. That's what it was. So, Joe, give us an update on the market. Where are they at today? We're off a little bit.
I mean,
the prices
are
off.
Yeah.
Prices up. Yeah.
We're down 4.30 seconds on the day, Dave. But this is following a couple really good days. You know, last week we saw a nice improvement following the resolution of the government issues, and I'll talk about that in just a little bit. But yeah, we're off just a little bit today. This morning, existing home sales were released, and they came out very close to expectations. So there wasn't a big movement. There was a slight drop in the number of September new home sales from August, but still up nicely from prior years. And so it really didn't have a big influence on mortgage prices today. But last week, you know, we had a very interesting week, and we're going to talk about it with Jay. But we saw a real nice improvement in prices once it became clear on Wednesday, or seemed clear on Wednesday, and then became certain that the resolution was drafted and passed regarding the raising the debt ceiling and funding the government again. And, you know, usually when that kind of uncertainty is removed, you see a drop in MBS prices. But
yeah,
we didn't see that. We saw an improvement in MBS prices. And MBS prices improved by almost a point and a quarter since midday Wednesday. And so that, as well as stock market going crazy, the S&P reached an all-new high, you got to believe it has to do with quantitative easing. You know, it's every time that we've seen a big movement in prices for both stocks and bonds in the same direction, it's usually been associated with quantitative easing. And I think that's more of what we're seeing today, or what we saw last week. We saw, I think, and I'll be interested to hear Jay's opinion about this, but I think that part of the reason we improved in MBS prices in the stock market is because there's an expectation for the taper to be delayed.
Yeah, because of the government shutdown and the economic impact. That's one of the questions they have for Jay.
There are several things here. One is that the you know, it's going to be hard to know just how impacted the economy was, and Jay will give us some impacts on that. So, you know, we won't know at the October meeting if the economy's really doing that well. And then in the December meeting, just following that, is the government is expected to come up upon another deadline as far as funding of the mm-hmm. government. And then in January, the debt limit's coming right after that. So it's likely to be March or after that we'll see quantitative easing. Anyway, I think that had an influence on MBS prices positively as well as the stock market last week. So there were several economic reports that were scheduled to come out last week that did not. They'll come out later, most likely next week. Of course, the jobs report that was scheduled to come out the first Friday of the month is just now coming out tomorrow. So this week we have the jobs report is being really the most significant thing. I'm not sure yet if new home sales are going to come out. They're scheduled to come out Thursday as well as durable orders. And both of those are released by government entities, and it'll be a question as to whether or not they're prepared to release those on time. The jobs report, the consensus calls for about 185,000 net new jobs and the unemployment rate to remain at 7.3%. So that comes out tomorrow morning, 8:30, so pay attention.
It's so important.
And that's it.
Yeah, now we got new home sales and all the other good stuff that's out there. And, you know, folks, if you have this service called MBS Quote Line, you're looking at the screen I'm looking at. You can see at Economic Events, you land this homepage that they have is just loaded with great information. But even more significant, and especially when I'm out traveling around as much as I do, is the updates they get texted. You get sent to you by via email or text. I think it's email, and I just love it. It's just so powerful. Thank you, Joe. It's good to be back on the broadcast with you. And,
I've been out a couple weeks, as you were.
Yeah, it has, as you were. We both have been gone a little bit more than we want. Yeah. Well, folks, we're going to be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur. Get MBS prices as trades happen. Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you back with us. We've got Paul Mollow on the line. You got to go check out his blog and his write-ups. I don't know if it's the regular write-up that he does every day can be found at www.imfnews.com. Good to have you with us, Paul.
Thanks, David.
By the way, I'm seeing your first post here on this. Your first article is May 1st, the target for new GSE loan limits, ? So let's get started right there. We've been hearing about this, and I just really question the wisdom at this time when we don't have a recovery that there are there. Is the question mark imply that they're rethinking that?
Well, actually, I want to talk about your jury duty last week. You sure you want to talk about loan limits? I'm just kidding.
That's pretty boring.
This is late-breaking information. We've been reporting for I can't remember how many weeks now that it, you know, it was going to be pushed off. The question originally we heard it was going to be late in the first quarter. Then we heard late in the second quarter. Then we heard, you know, there was some report on Friday by another news organization, and, you know, I think they said later in the year. And, you know, we're sort of hearing now from one very good source tells us, May 1. I should note that Edward DeMarco, the acting director of FHFA, they don't like to be called FIFA, is making a speech later in the week in Washington. There's some speculation he's going to finally, you know, give some guidance out there on the loan limit issue. And if he doesn't, he's probably going to be asked it by someone in the audience. And there's also talk, well, if they don't, you know, lower the loan limit until May 1st or some other date, you know, when are they going to start playing with the guarantee fees? That's a big issue. I mean, right now it's roughly 50 basis points. It used to be 25 a couple of years ago. You know, so there's all sorts of chatter. You know, the strange thing is there's not much guidance. And I think the shutdown in the federal government and, you know, the thought now about the tapering coming later on, I think you guys just spoke about that with Joe. You know, and listen, you know, the economy is losing jobs. At least it looks like that way. You're seeing layoffs, you know, more layoff reports. The government being shut for 16 days didn't help. I can't tell you how many mortgage layoff stories I've written in the last 90 days, and it's getting even worse. You know, I would guess when we see the mortgage employment numbers, it might be a month. They lag the national numbers by a month. They might be pretty ugly. It depends on when they're filed and when they filter in. So, you know, right now it's up in the air. We're hearing May 1. Hopefully FIFA will clarify the issue later in the week. But, you know, because everyone wants to know. There's been 20, 30 letters written to DeMarco by congressmen and trade groups over the last 2 weeks. So, it's a very hot issue for the industry. Also on IMFnews.com, we had a coverage of FHA saying it's going to take them 60 days to recover from the shutdown. It's going to affect apparently HECM approvals more than anything else. But there's also going to be a delay in other approvals. So that's a somewhat big story as well. We got some data from our newsletter, Inside MBS and ABS, and Inside Nonconforming Markets, about First Republic being one of the top contributors to jumbo MBS through the first 9 months of the year at $2.1 billion. You know, we talked about the J.P. Morgan settlement or the rumored settlement with FHFA on the sales to Fannie and Freddie. We're hearing talk that B of A is next, and that's going to be a large number. We got into securitizing excess servicing rights a little bit on today's daily news, as well as some talk about another mortgage company in Florida laying off and Wells Fargo downgrading Penny Mac and NationStar stock. So, you know, it's pretty busy out there in mortgage land.
If you're trying to follow all the stories, I don't know how you do it, but you do, and you got Brandon that's there with you, and, of course, Charles and the whole group, just amazing amount of data, information, fresh and current, and appreciate you taking time out. And I hope you can tune in and listen to Jay's comments a little bit later on.
Yeah, I'd like
it's
going to
be fascinating. I look forward to having you. But thank you so much for taking a few moments out and sharing with us on this. And then I will be at that conference that he's speaking at Thursday. It's the Bipartisan Policy Center conference that is going on. And I will be there. I got invited as one of the talking heads for the industry to attend that, so I'm going to be in there and to hopefully front and center. So I hope to see you there.
We're going to be there. We're going to have someone there.
Well, I would love to see if you're there. If whoever's there, have them look me up. I'll be somewhere up front. And so appreciate it.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Right. You bet. Bye-bye. Good to have you here, Alice. Let's get into what's going on. I know you've got some QM, QRM. Is that, am I getting this right, Alice? I don't want to let the cat out of the bag or say it wrong, but good to have you with us. And thank you again, Alice, so much for hosting the broadcast. You really do. And by the way, I should have said, as soon as I heard my headset go dead, if I do that, I'll put it up here on the screen so you can see it and you can jump in until I get it all fixed. But But anyway, give us an update on the legislative. I've been looking forward to it. I love hearing your updates, even when I am not on, because I dial in immediately to listen to what you've got.
Well, I, for one, am very glad. I shouldn't say just for one. I'm sure many are glad to have you back. So welcome back. It is always nice to have you back here to guide. So I can just sit back and just do the legislative update.
Yeah. It is a little nice to
but
do it
Andy
relaxed.
But Andy and I had, you know, with Joe gone as well, I think, you know, Andy and I, we've got a lot of good information out there for folks in those last two episodes. So go check those out.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah. We did. They're
really
good. We could go on and on forever, I think, about what's going on in the industry. And last week was great on that tech ROI. So, all right, so this week, QRM, you only have, you know, less than 10 days now to get your comments in on the qualified residential mortgage issue, right? And the idea that if I have a qualified residential mortgage that is exempt or non-exempt from risk retention, which is completely different from do I have a QM that meets saleability and underwriting and product standards, right, with the points and fees test. So we've said all along as an industry, and MBA has been fighting hard for this, to get those two to match up. So I want everybody to be aware that in this proposal that is posted now that you only have 10 days left to comment on, this is your chance to speak up that they do need to be aligned. Because in this 570-some-odd page document is the idea of a QRM or, what would be called a QM-plus approach. So they're asking for comments. And keep in mind, when I say they, that's all the agencies. This is not running through CFPB. This is the other federal agencies, FDIC, OCC, the Fed. They're handling this particular issue. And so they're asking for comments on whether or not the additional criteria that is in this legislation or in this rule should be put into place. Now, here is a little bit of an example of what a QM plus has that they're talking about. So if you remember in our QM, we have term, product issues, points and fees, underwriting, and DTI, right? We're all starting to get a handle on that as we try and identify QM. So the QM plus, which would essentially say, is this loan exempt from risk retention because it now very much aligns with the agency's, you know, standards, would add in, should it 1 to 4 principal dwellings, it would say no subordinate liens for purchases. That's an issue. You know, if you remember back in the day, back in the problem period, there were a lot of piggyback loans. And so Dodd-Frank has all those, that microscope that on every single component in that puzzle, and piggybacks was one of them. So this, the original QRM brought up that there would be no subordinate liens. The QM Plus also talks about more specific credit criteria, 0 times 30 that the customer has on the credit report right now, 0 times 60 in the last 24 months, 3 years since a bankruptcy judgment or collection. And again, not using credit score, using just a basic credit line analysis. And I want to clarify something about no subordinate liens. There would be an allowance for a subordinate lien on a refi using an HCLTV format, the total balance on the home equity, but not for purchases. And then the biggest issue being, you know, down payment requirement, 70%. So, you know, Dave Stevens wrote about this. The ABA picked up on, was reporting with Dave's comments that this is a very significant issue. We have to comment, folks. Do not wait to get the MBA's comments. I like when I can, but a lot of times they don't come out soon enough. And I think the more unique comments that they receive, the better. So when MBA comes out with their, if you want to submit and say ditto, great. You know, do that as well, because nothing stops you from commenting more than once, right? Go out as many times as you need to. But they need specifics about the impact to this market on having a QM plus. And I think one of the things that they are interested in is the concept that if they didn't collect this information up front, would in the securitization process, right, in the delivery of the RMBS transactions, would we be giving enough loan level information that investors would have enough to know what they're investing in, right? So that's another important distinction with QRM. QRM is all about making sure investors know what is going on with that with the pool of loans that they're starting to buy. The other issue is the complexity of mixing, right? So if QM is different from QRM, how do I put those in pools? You know, there are lots of financial reasons to make a case, not only from a consumer standpoint, but from a business operational standpoint, and, of course, everything involved in secondary for RMBS and ABS and so forth, that we are consistent so that investors have one way of looking things as well. I would make a case that if I'm an investor, I want to know the QM and QRM, right? And it would certainly help
right.
investors, I think, to have that be consistent. So that's my kind of summary in a nutshell on
hey,
the QRM. Here's the quick thing. Go to page 274. I like when someone tells me what page to go to. I already did it for you. Just go to page 274.
That's where it's all at.
Well, that's where this whole concept of QM Plus starts. And it goes on for a few pages in there. And, you know, back early on, you know, the idea that they are asking for comments, get your voice heard now, and then you won't have to complain later. So we are still watching.
Well, we could probably still we may still complain
right.
later, but we're well, at least we get our voice heard.
Right,
they
to complain, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So
if you don't say anything.
You'll be in a position to be able to complain, right.
Yeah.
So
Joe,
the other
Joe
bill we're
to...
watching is – I'm
okay.
sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, I'm sorry. I was going to say, Joe, did you have a question on that point?
Well, it's on QRM, and it's something maybe we need to address in a different show. But I have always wondered how that, you know, QRM, if you are holding risk retention, it's a percentage of something. It's, what, 10%, right? So how do you determine how much capital to hold, and how do you determine who takes a loss? Do you share in losses? Do you take the first 10% and then you're done? I mean, has anyone read about that? I've tried to think through how would that work, and it'd be very complicated over the long run to determine actually how that capital that you're supposed to hold is to be used to absorb losses.
Accounted for.
Well, in this bill, in this proposed rule, it describes some options for how that might work. So at this point, I'm not prepared to go into all those details because I know we want to get Jake Brinkman on the call, and that's a long discussion, as you said. So I think it is worthwhile to get that on one of our next programs, if not next Monday, because we'll be able to perhaps squeeze that in a little bit before people have to actually respond. But it does talk about in this proposal some of those
good.
Options. Yeah.
You said you were tracking
concern,
one
right?
other thing? Yeah, it is. What, you're tracking one other thing?
One last bill, House Bill 3211. This one's important because we really would like to see some movement on having the loan level price adjustments removed from the three-point test. The more customers I continue to talk about with the points and fees, you know, in our health check service, we're offering a calculator for people to use. And this LLPA fee concept of having to add that in the three-point test is really making a difference for a lot of companies. And so House Bill 3211 doesn't have a lot of legs. We would have to try and push it. There is a Senate companion bill out there as well to try and have loan level price adjustments removed from the three-point test. So get your congressman working on that one, too. Maybe we can make our lives a little easier before year end. So that's my report for now, Dave. I can't wait
Good.
To hear from Jay.
I know. We've got Jay coming up. We've got Tony Garitano right after the break, and then we got Jay. It's just a short time after that. With that, and of course, we got the Prophet Doctor. Love to get his color and everything. He does have some colorful comments along there, so we love to get that. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Good to have you all with us. Cody Garitano, good to have you on the line. And I've been thinking about you as I look at all the things going on in technology, Tony. And I look at how can lenders use technology to ensure accuracy. And it's certainly a hot issue out there, especially when you look at the reporting that's necessary. Tony, good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me, Dave. It's always fun. What I've been noticing on this topic, though, is that there are a lot of technology vendors that are coming up with scoring technology.
Right.
I think the industry is really very familiar with the FICO score, so I think that that's something that the industry can really get their hands around. So a lot of these technology vendors are trying to analyze your data and give you an accuracy score that's very similar to a FICO score, because it's something, like I said, that a lender would be comfortable getting and would fully understand. So I think that that's a trend that, that we're seeing a lot of. I mean, Alamode has it when it comes to appraisals. Platinum Data just came out with the scoring mechanism for appraisals this morning. Calyx Point has come up with a scoring mechanism to determine if you're in QM compliance, and Motivity Solutions has various scoring mechanisms when it comes to overall business intelligence. So, you know, I think it's a trend.
That's interesting. Now, are there any downfalls to using this type of technology, though? That when you start getting to scoring, does that open a Pandora's box of another sort?
I think it does, Dave, because if you're going to come up with, if you're going to use that technology vendor's score as a way to prove compliance or accuracy, then you have to be confident in that score. So
right.
You really have to do due diligence on the technology provider and find out how they come up with that score. Because if they come up with that score in a bogus way, just because you got a good score doesn't mean that you have
that's
any
my
level
concern.
Of accuracy.
And that's, I'm going to get the profit doctor's comment that, about that in a minute, because I think that is the big thing, is you get a false sense of security. Oh, I got a great score. I don't have to worry about
right.
it. No, you better not, because you are accountable to that data, and I think that's so important. I want to talk briefly. This is a great point, but looking at the clock, you've got an Engage event that just precedes the NBA, and it's on a Sunday morning, and I want to get a little word in on that, Tony. And it's, and I want to say this, it's a beautiful compliment, not a conflict with the NBA. And I think it's a beautiful how you fit in this, and it really kind of gets everyone's mindset. So talk briefly on that for the few moments we got.
Oh, I think it is. I mean, it's at the Embassy Suites in Washington, D.C. It starts on Sunday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's only a two-hour event. It goes until 4:30 at the most. There's no fee to attend, and it doesn't in any way conflict with the NBA. In fact, we get some people that come to Engage and figure, hey, while I'm in town for Engage, I should stop over and attend the NBA as well. And it's really about thought leadership, and it's about getting your mind ready to get the most out of the NBA and to really move the industry forward.
Yeah. Well, I've enjoyed it. I've attended it. I've spoken at it, and I'm really excited to it. So it's 2 o'clock Sunday at the Embassy Suites, and that's where we're having our hosting our suites, and our events are there as well. So it's a great place, good venue, and it's an important thing, and it's free. How about that? You get to come and listen.
There you go.
Check out more information about this, www.progressinlending. It's where you can learn more. Of course, you can email Tony at Tony, T-O-N-Y, at progresslending.com. Call him, 203-529-3131. Tony, so good to have you on the broadcast. Appreciate it, as always. See you here a week from this coming Sunday. All right, seeing you
Thank
this coming
you,
Sunday.
See you soon.
It's this, yeah, you bet. Looking forward to it, Tony. Appreciate it. Andy, Profit Doctor, I'd love to get your thoughts on that. I think there's it's interesting about the credit score, because I think a lot of people are trying to solve this, because data accuracy, as you well know, is a big issue out there, and it has bitten some people, especially those hedging. More and more are hedging, and if you don't have data accuracy, wow, bite you. Thoughts?
It does. Absolutely it does. That's the whole point. You got to have people like to simplify decisions. People like to build algorithms and, you know, programs that get a bunch of pieces of information and then draw conclusions based on that data so that you don't have to have people doing it, because the presumption is that computers are more accurate from people because they just are. But it's still a matter of a computer can't determine if the data input is validated or not, whereas a human is more likely to be able to apply some level of subjectivity, because computers aren't subjective, they're objective. It is binary. It's either yes or no, on or off, one or zero. And so that's the risk of moving everything to computers. You know, when credit scores started coming out and we started getting all the AUSs running and we got an AUS acceptance, so the underwriters could just park their brain at the door and not have to think about it anymore. And we all know what a horrible consequence there was that we're still dealing with from people
horrible
doing
place.
That. And
that
people,
brought us,
you know, if people would have just,
Prophet Doctor, did we lose your audio there? Oh, my gosh. This
Dave,
is one
I'm
of
here.
Those,
can you hear me?
Oh, technology is a wonderful
thing.
I think we just lost the Prophet Doctor's audio. If you hear us,
Dave?
We don't hear you, you can join back in and share some of your comments. I was teasing the Prophet Doctor earlier about how can he be colorful in a CPA, because we always see CPAs are just such black and white kind of folks. So we'll have to see if we can get him back on in just a minute. Andy, are you there? I see you on the switchboard, but
fine,
I do
Dave.
Not see you live. Well, folks, we're going to get Andy back on so he can ask some questions about what's going on with the economy. In fact, we're going to be leading off with some of his questions as we take after the break when we get Jay Brinkman on. So stay tuned. Looking forward to having you on with us, folks. We'll be right back after this brief break. Hopefully it's not my audio that's gone out again, but that should not be the case. All right, we'll be right back after this brief break. Well, I don't know. I'm trying to get the ad running, and I see it's not working. Have we got Andy, you there?
Dave, can you hear me?
I do. I hear you loud and clear, Alice. I am so sorry. It looks
okay.
Like that ad
Dave, Joe's here.
Is just running. Yeah, Joe's here. Andy's there. Well, I'm not sure if we lost Andy or not. But anyway, let's. I'm trying to run the ad, and yeah, I see it. If you can see my screen, for those of you that are logged in, you'll see my screen is just spinning away. So we just lost that. We'll try to see if we can't get onto it. Let's forget the ad and get into the content, because that's why we're here, to hear everything we've heard before, but really get some real insights into what's going on. I just want to make sure we got Jay Brinkman's mic turned on. Jay, are you there?
I am here. If your audio is working.
It is. Well, that was so strange. When you do live broadcast and we're dialing with voice over IP into an audio, into a program that's run by voice over IP and everything else, it's just amazing this darn thing works at all. And that's another thing is, how do you, as economists, figure it out? First of all, folks, I want to say we're introducing Jay Brinkman, who's the Chief Economist, Senior Vice President of Research and Education at the Mortgage Bankers Association. Jay just announced his retirement, but he has been there since 2001, and he is, just before joining the MBA, he was with Fannie Mae at the Portfolio Strategy Group, risk-based capital issues. He's a native New Orleans guys. We love the guys from New Orleans, and he began his career on Capitol Hill as a press secretary. So what a perfect place to be at the MBA, with being the chief economist with a political background. Amazing combination. And we're losing him. He's retiring. So we've got to find out what he's going to do. Jay, good to have you on the broadcast. So you really are retiring?
Well, David, I'm retiring from the MBA. I am retiring from Washington, D.C. After all the years here, my wife and I were talking about it. I'm actually hitting the MBA retirement age next month and said, well, you know, we own this historic old home in New Orleans on a streetcar line, and we have a new grandson over in Houston, and my parents are up in age and in need help, and said, maybe it's time we just sort of hung it up here and headed down there. So I realized since 1973 when I finished college, I have had exactly 2 weeks off between jobs. And during those 2 weeks, both my kids came down with the chicken pox. So I said, let me find out what it's like to get up one morning not being worried about the absolute next thing I need to do, take a little bit of a break, and then who knows what comes next.
Well, the reality is you are going to be missed. You've brought a great sense of credibility. You know, your predecessor did an outstanding job, Doug Duncan, and I appreciate him, what he's done over at the NBA, and over at Fannie. And I just love the humor of the two of you guys. And so it's been just a real honor to have known you at the NBA, and we're excited to continue to know you, because when you say you're retiring from the NBA, it doesn't sound like you may be retiring from the industry. So we'll have to stay tuned, folks, to find out what's coming up. So talk about something that's coming up, Jay. We've got the NBA 100th Anniversary Annual Convention in Washington, D.C. And other than the fact that it's the 100th anniversary, why is this convention so important?
Well, you know, I think the location and the timing is really perfect for what we're facing. If you look at the pressures companies are under in terms of lower volumes, the cost of complying now with the regulations after we've spent so much time debating the law and the regulations, that really the benefits of being here, it's the networking discussions with your peers. If you can come away with just one good idea, one idea for avoiding a repurchase, that pays for the plane ticket and the registration fee right there. We've put together some really good sessions. The expo hall, just seeing all of the vendors there in one place, being able to talk with them. And then there's also the NBA governance. People say, how do we get involved? We've got our committee meetings all day Sunday on the different topics. Anybody who's an NBA member can get involved. Speakers, we've got, because we're in D.C., we've got CFPB Director Richard Cordray, HUD Secretary Donovan, the House Banking Committee Chairman Jeb Henserling is coming to talk to us about his perspective.
Wow.
FHFA Director Ed DeMarco will be there to talk about several things. Ted Tozer from Ginny May. And, you know, these are the guys, like it or not, they're going to be deciding the future of everyone's company and the future of the business. And you got to come hear what's on their minds.
Yeah.
So from the industry, we're going to have Lou Ranieri there, Mike Hyde from Wells.
Oh.
Leighton Myopoulos from Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, Matthew Filmon, Chicago Federal Home Loan Bank.
Really?
They just announced their Ginny Mae approval for Ginny Mae securitization, so they can come in and say why the Home Loan Bank now is the latest Ginny lender. I actually was having dinner last night with the former president of Chicago Home Loan Bank and commented about the fact that they can be a Ginny issuer. Unlike Fannie and Freddie, they actually have some capital. The Fannie and Freddie cannot be approved as Ginny issuers, I guess, since they have zero capital, but that's a whole other issue. We have the Bush brothers, sort of down on the list, but we do have a former president, former governor of Florida coming in to give their perspective, and that is just tremendous demand then to see him coming back to town and that sort of thing. Dave Stevens will give his usual energetic speech. Mike Fratantoni, who will be taking my place, will be sort of giving his first talk as the incoming chief economist. And it'll be my farewell speech. And since I've never worried too much about what I've said in the past, who knows what I'll say now that I'm back. You know, we have personally arranged to keep the government open during the convention so that if you want to come here and see the monuments, you don't have to rely on a bunch of World War II veterans to tear down the barricades if you want to see the World War II memorial. But there are a few other things to see and do in Washington, so it should be good. You know, we've got all the other sessions, how to do non-QM lending, vendor management, particularly in the area with CFP requirements for vendor oversight, technology, what's going on with MSR strategy going forward. So it's really a jam-packed few days in terms of what people will get.
Your session I'm looking specifically close forward to because it's as informative as is entertaining. Excuse me, you are just bring about the message. And I think in this day and age with what's going on out there, I value people that have the knowledge, information, but also can deliver it in a way that gets you chuckling. And because I think sometimes if you got to get some information coming as a bitter pill, it's you know, when you can swallow it with a little laughter, it seems to go down a little bit, as that old Mary Poppins was. Mary Poppins said that medicine goes down with a spoonful of medicine or whatever. Anyway, the point
sugar.
Of it is you sugar. Thank you, Andy. I knew you got the lyrics down for every song that's ever been. I want to get into my first question, Jay, is in light of the government shutdown, does that change your forecast or does it change how we should see the economy moving forward? There seems to be enough talk about that. Your thoughts?
I don't think the shutdown in and of itself is going to impact the economy. The issue is really the increase in uncertainty surrounding additional shutdowns, additional debates over the debt ceiling, and really it's that uncertainty much more so than interest rates or anything else that's holding back the economy. As I travel around and talk to banking groups and others, I'll ask the bank CEOs, what's holding back lending? Is it because you don't want to make the loans? And I say, our customers just don't want to invest at this point, when they don't know what tax policy is going to be, because part of the debate over the debt ceiling, the Obama administration is now coming back with some of the left in Congress and demanding certain tax increases as their price for any more spending limitations or sequesters. So I think that uncertainty is going to be the big overhang over the economy.
Andy, you submitted a whole bunch of great questions as we got ready to talk to Jay. I'd love to have you kind of run through some of the questions you had, because there was some great stuff here. Then we're going to move to Joe and Alice. Go ahead, Andy.
Okay. Hey, Jay. Thanks for being on the show today.
Sure, Andy.
One of the things I was interested in hearing about the new FAIR chairman, Janet Yellen, you kind of wonder if she really does yell a lot, though, Yellen. Immaculate credentials, you know, PhD through Yale and so forth, you know. But she also is entrenched in the Republic of Berkeley, you know, out there at University of California. Great school, but you know, about as left as it gets. So how will her role in as the Fed chairman potentially affect, or will likely affect, in your opinion, monetary policy?
I'm on the sort of group of 50 economists that participate in the monthly Wall Street Journal poll of economists, and they asked this exact same question a few weeks ago. So I'll give you the exact same answer, since I don't have a new one, that I think the policy will by and large be the same. It's really difficult to come up with a scenario for a more accommodative policy than what they're carrying out now. I think the change is going to be around the rhetoric, whereas I think Bernanke was a little more balanced in his view toward protecting the currency and that, and understanding sort of the limitations in monetary policy and actually fundamentally impacting the economy. I think Yellen is going to very much tilt toward addressing unemployment and that with her rhetoric. And to the extent then the Fed impacts the economy with rhetoric, I think that's going to be the difference.
Mm. Okay, so that's a great point. Protect the economy, protect the currency versus support unemployment or help discuss unemployment on a greater forum. So I guess the thing I was wondering about is it's sounding like that among the Fed governors there's already a bit of a split, and Yellen already is, you know, on one side and several others are on the other side. So, but from an outsider, if the Fed governors can't agree on monetary policy, so they ultimately make decisions based on a plurality or maybe just a simple majority as opposed to a broad-based consensus, how can we be confident in the effectiveness of the decisions coming out of the Fed?
Well, how can you be confident in the effectiveness? I think that's really part of the problem, why they've got the dissension. If it was a clear-cut case of effectiveness, you would have a unanimous decision.
Yes.
The problem now is, how do you measure the efficacy of this kind of monetary policy against unemployment? And I think it's increasingly apparent that there really isn't that much benefit, that if you look at what's driving down the unemployment rate, it has as much to do with part-time workers who are looking for full-time work, but they're counted as employed because they're getting some sort of paycheck, people continuing to leave the workforce in droves. And so we're getting an improvement in unemployment for reasons totally unassociated with the growth in the economy. But now the question is, well, but if we stop this accommodative policy, if we begin to taper QE3, look at the negative effect on the stock market, look at the negative effect on interest rates. I was on a panel at the American Enterprise Institute on Thursday. It's unfortunately being televised live. I went C-SPAN, so it was actually recorded for posterity. But I said, we're reaching a point where it's like coming across somebody hitting himself on the head with a hammer. And you say, why are you doing that? Why are you continuing to do that? And the answer is, well, it hurts too much when I stop. And I think that's maybe what the Fed is facing, is that they can't point to why a particular increase in QE3 is going to help, but they're really more worried about what's going to be the impact on the markets, the psychological effect if we pull it back. That was really what Bernanke accomplished, maybe inadvertently, is letting a little bit of the steam out, but I think now it's building back up. Could I make one other point on tapering? I don't know if this is going to be one of the questions that you ask.
Sure.
Here is a question for everyone listening. What do we do when the mortgage market tapers and the Fed doesn't? Remember, the Fed's locked into buying $45 billion a month, and you're looking at that as saying, well, gee, you know, any kind of pullback from that, and it's bad, but the mortgage industry is not going to be producing mortgages and securities at the same volume. So if they keep it up, their estimates that they'll be looking at about buying 90% of gross issuance, I looked at it, and that's north of 50% of all mortgages produced sort of fourth quarter this year, 2014, not just securitized, but everything going into bank balance
sheets. Virtually everything.
Do we really want the Fed buying those kind of levels, or are they going to be forced to sort of taper off MBS just because the market's not going to be that big?
Well, that's an interesting more demand than supply, what happens to prices kind of thing.
Exactly.
Well, and then I want to interject on that point is, how do we ever get the private sector back in to buying, which we badly need, if we have the Feds increasing the overall percentage, even though they're staying at the same dollar amount, the loan volumes fall off, and then we have the federal government staying at the same buying levels, increasing the percentage. How do we get the much-needed private capital to come back in and start opening up some potential alternatives to the Fed? So that's my biggest concern going on that. It's a crazy. Sorry, Andy, if I had to just interject that.
Well, that's a great point. And so that Joe and Alice can have a turn here, I'm going to ask just one more question, although I've got many more. But, Jay, if you could, you know, when I was in college in the 70s, we were talking, you know, trillions of debt, the national debt in, you know, low single digits. You know, I don't remember, 2-3 trillion, something like that. And so now, you know, we get to 7 or 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Obama comes in, 13, 14, 15, 16, and rising. And everything I was taught about finance doesn't seem to matter, because the world should have blown up when we hit 10 trillion, but it didn't. So if it's 16 trillion, why not 20 trillion? If it's 20 trillion, why not 25 trillion? I mean, how much national debt really is too much? And because what happens
Where's
when
the
U.S. hit 17? I mean, if it didn't happen at 16, is it going to happen at 20? And how much is too much? Where's the trigger points that don't seem to be happening?
The only thing we've got going for us right now is the dollar status as a reserve currency. And the feeling that there is, if they were to put in some taxes on the economy, that a large portion of that could be closed rather rapidly, albeit throwing us into a recession. But our debt-to-GDP ratios would put us out of compliance with some of the rules being imposed by the IMF in Europe, because we're very high. I think the rules that you and I both learned back then still apply. It's just they've been delayed because everybody else is so bad. If there were any sort of alternative to the U.S. dollar at the moment, I think investors would be saying, you know, this is too much of a risk with the overhang of inflation. And at some point, and I always say pay attention to coverage ratios on the bids, because when those coverage ratios start to fall, indication of less appetite, you know, just take a look at what happened in the T-bill market last week around the showdown, how quickly that went up. That's when we're going to get in trouble. And the problem is, when we see the trouble, it's going to be too late to act.
Which explains why we may see Bernanke out there supporting the dollar at the risk of other things, because if that dollar, if we don't support the dollar, then we have ourselves a house, a horse of a completely different color in this whole thing, which is interesting commentary. Joe, let's move over to you. Get you. You had some great questions you submitted. You wanted to get to Jay, so let's move to Joe Farr.
Well, to continue on with the whole question about the taper, the next time you're surveyed by the whoever does that of the 50 economists, and they ask when do you expect that the taper will begin, what do you say?
Well, my answer 2 weeks ago was December. I think there was and the only reason for that was I think the Fed and Bernanke would like to send some signal before Yellen comes in, that the idea is that if they already established a trajectory, even if it's only 5 to 10 billion, then it's a question of her continuing that trajectory, but in a sense that it's already sort of the peak and headed down. So there is not as much of an economic reason, because again, I went through, there's not as much of an economic driver behind this, but I think it's as much Fed politics that might drive us to a December start.
Yeah, this is off my list, but do you anticipate as much rancor and political maneuvering, et cetera, that we've seen the last few weeks taking place as we get into those next deadlines?
Yes.
Will we then be into a period of greater uncertainty than what we've just been through?
I think so, unless there is a movement to, in a sense, saying to the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party, okay, you've made your points, now let's step back and see what we can really then negotiate to see if we can't come out with something similar to the sequester bill we got last time, and how do we extend that perhaps into the area of entitlements, which the president has said in speeches he is open to. But he is now under pressure from the left wing of his party saying, we don't want any cutbacks in entitlements. We don't like what you've been doing with the cost of living increases. We want more, and we want you to pay for it with big tax increases. And so he may then not be in a position necessarily to deliver the votes, even if the Republicans can sort of get together and stop doing their circular firing squad that they were good at the last couple of weeks. So I see it as a period of greater uncertainty and just with shifting coalitions here.
Wow. Well, specifically about the mortgage industry, we've read a lot about massive layoffs, et cetera. And just how do you see the employment in the mortgage industry playing out? Are you seeing the same sort of layoff activity in the medium to smaller mortgage origination companies as we're reading about on the big ones?
There's some, but what we're seeing is the smaller companies, particularly the independents, not as much the smaller bank-affiliated originators, were more heavily concentrated in the purchase market anyway. So that while the refi fall-offs has hurt them, they haven't been hurt as much, whereas some of these big bank shops that maybe were running 90% refis, particularly if you throw in the HARPs, they were the ones who immediately had the volume drops. In the smaller shops, they are still doing a fairly healthy purchase business. And what they're kind of do is they're using it to weed through some of the lesser performers. So if you had an LO who was having a hard time bringing in the purchase business, was living off a handful of refis, you'd maybe let that person go. If your fulfillment shop now was to right-size that for lower volumes. So they're looking at it, but I haven't seen sort of the wholesale layoffs that we're seeing among the big lenders.
Yeah, good. Well, I'll turn it over to you, Alice. I know you got some good questions here.
Well, I think it was just kind of dovetailing off of that is, kind of then what is the MBA outlook now for those volume numbers? I know I haven't taken the weekly survey, but kind of, looking a little farther out, how should lenders be planning?
Well, we think we will finish 2013. Our current official posting is about $1.6 trillion. There's a reason for me to believe that number is going to change a little bit between now and next Wednesday or next Tuesday when we announce our official number for 13 and 14. And currently for 14, we're right at about $1.1 trillion. and we're re-looking at that based upon what we're seeing taking place in the purchase market. No drastic numbers. I did threaten Mike Fratantoni that I was going to announce our forecast for next year was for $2 trillion, an all-time high market, and now Mike will tell you how we're going to get there. But since he's been a long-time friend, I don't think I'm going to do that.
Well, do you see us, you know, yeah. Well, I think, you know, the only place down below 1.1 is, you know, below a trillion. When was the last time we were below a trillion?
If it comes in this way, we're probably looking at a 2000 market before some of the run-up 2001. So I'd put us back in sort of that 99, 2000, 2001 framework in terms of volume.
Yeah. So the now, with all that being said, you know, we have quite a long list of regulations going into effect in January. Do you see those impacting the market? You know, what's your take on that?
Well, here's how it's going to have an impact. It is absolutely driving up everybody's cost of making a loan.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the higher volumes, we still see unit costs going up quarter after quarter. The compliance costs, the checker of the checker of the checker on all of the quality assurance and regulatory stuff, that's not necessarily going away, and that's a fixed cost that's not driven by volume. So what I'm afraid of is as volumes fall, we're going to see that those costs go up. So, yes, that is, and so unless lenders are able then to address it through pricing, if we can continue to get pretty high gain on sale, that'll cover some of it, but that's going to be the big question next year.
Yeah, how to save money in those unit costs. Go ahead, Joe. Go ahead. Back to you, Dave.
I was going to say, do you see this just getting passed on to the consumer? I mean, we've got to maintain our profits. Are you going to see the compression of our pricing? Certainly the guys that have the pricing advantage are going to obviously take advantage of their position, being able to price lower and compress a lot of people out of the market competitively. Are we going to see the landscape change much, or is it going to be pretty much this way this time next year, after you're retired? If you're from your rocking chair, will you look back and say, yep, landscape hasn't changed, as if you're going to be in a rocking chair? Just joking. But honestly, where do you see this thing looking back?
Well, the big cost historically is how do you acquire the customer? And it's not clear that the large institutions have an advantage in the purchase market in that customer acquisition. Some of them have figured out, some of them haven't. I think that is still the role for the smaller ones. And the key is, how do you deal with ELO compensation, commission structure, the balance against the importance of your back-end office, against the pricing? But I don't see as much of a pricing war this time. I think, and we're not going to see as much chasing stuff down the credit curve either. So I think this is going to be a little better than we've seen in the past when we've had volume falls.
Isn't the pricing problem going to be QM, though, in the three-point test?
Oh, on the upper, yeah, but I think what they're going to end up doing is simply cutting off the credit, and we've got a number of problems with the QM, the volatility in the rates, the Freddie rate that they base it on is simply incorrect, and as you mentioned, the loan level price adjusters, all sorts of things I think but we've been beating that drum for a long time with them, but I think that's going to be, okay, if we can't bring it in for under that, we're not going to make the loan.
Folks, we've had as our guest Jay Brinkman, Chief Economist of the MBA, and Jay will be speaking at the 100th anniversary at the MBA Annual Conference this coming Sunday in Washington, D.C. Jay, which time are you speaking for those that absolutely want to get there? I know you're speaking several times, but which times would we
The final, I am the final general session, so I get to close the convention. So we'll be talking
Wednesday
morning. I don't remember if it's 9 or 9:30, something like that. So,
well, we'll be absolutely coming in and spending some time at that one. So the drums are signaling. We're done. Jay, thank you so much for taking time. I know how crazy it is around there getting ready for the conference. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. And, again, congratulations on retirement. Can't wait to find out what you're going to be doing afterwards. Appreciate you, Jay.
Thank you, David, and everyone else.
You bet. Listeners, we've had Jay Brinkman. It's been good. You can download and listen to this broadcast. A lot of information there. Also, you can check us out on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. Again, do search my name, David Licken, or you can check out Licken on Lending. It's all over out there on the Internet. We've got lots of followers and feedback. Appreciate you. and Andy, Joe, Alice for being here and helping to carry the show and the load. Thank, apologize for the audio issues that we had earlier. Folks, see you at the conference. Check it out. Alice and I will be doing a broadcast live. I hope to get Andy in there as well. Have a great week, everyone. See you in D.C.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.